This is Radio Entrepreneurs. My name is Jeffrey Davis. I'm the host of the show and also chairman of the board of Mage LLC. Been sitting here with my buddy, Peter Myerson, attorney, partner at the law firm of Cohn, Raznick, Myerson, and Plout. And as I say, John Plout, that is.
You know, I have so much fun with you, Jeff. It really, this is such a good show. And today we have a great guest.
You know, you couldn't have a better guest in today's world than our next guest. And one of our reporters, John Dustin from JED Insurance. John, we're going to talk about disasters and how people need to work their way through them, correct?
Yes, timing is everything, Jeff, and I appreciate you having me on the show.
So let's get into it because I don't want to get in your way today.
So I think everybody's been tracking the hurricanes that are coming down south. And as I was preparing for the show, I was thinking, as an entrepreneur, there's several steps you need to take to be really prepared for a disaster. I think the important things are obviously not to oversell it, but you want to have a good relationship with an insurance agency. You want to make sure they're maintaining your documents just in the event you lose everything. Secondly, and we learned this in the storms of 2015, I would want to have a relationship with some sort of disaster recovery mold remediation company, because when a catastrophe hits, everybody's calling them. And if you've got a relationship with them or the agency has a relationship with them, you might come to the top of the pile. And the third thing, it isn't bad to have some contractors that you're aware of that are reputable and can help you after the disaster occurs.
So you're on their high priority list.
Yeah. I mean, it's like anything else in life. When Jeff runs a business, he has a lawyer, an accountant, an insurance agent, you know, advisors. You want to be prepared for when the disaster hits. Now, if you're a business, I think there's a few other key things that you kind of have to keep in the back of your mind. First and foremost, and we work with this with all of our clients, back up your software off-site somewhere. Because if you lose your hard drive and it's got your clients and your, you know, your formulas and your costs and your whatever, you're not going to be able to get up and running quickly.
You're out of business.
So, aren't most people on the cloud today, though?
Well, really. So that's a great question, Peter.
Peter's in the cloud.
Yeah. Peter's in the clouds.
I'm trying to float with it, Jeff. That's
it. I'm an advocate of offsite, and I've been offsite since 2010 when I incurred my own disaster with a roof caving in. The problem is some people believe that if they're out there, they don't have control of their own data, which is sort of a fallacy. But yeah, you're right. I think the cloud is a good example. Secondly, I coach people to make sure they have a list of all of their key employees, vendors, banks, in their cell phone, other places other than on their management systems. Because when a disaster occurs, you've got to contact people quickly. So have that list prepared.
That's a great idea, too. And that's the old-fashioned way. Well, and a piece of paper in your drawer.
I hate to say it, but Peter's an attorney. What's key in being an attorney? Communication.
Well, don't get me started. I mean, I'd say of all the lawyers I know, communication isn't necessarily their strong suit.
Well, it's a bell curve in any profession. I expect only 13% of all attorneys are outstanding, just like 13% of all doctors or architects are outstanding. And then the 87% are anywhere from decent to pretty bad.
It's a standard bell curve.
Standard bell curve. That's life. John, you've made it simple. Is it this simple? It's just that people don't do it?
I think there's so much, you know, with big data out there and predictive modeling and insurance companies predicting what's going to happen, I think everybody has made this such a comprehensive project to have some sort of disaster recovery. But when you think about it with thumb drives and backups off-site and cell phones and second sources of data, it is fairly simple. Now, there is one, as an entrepreneur, there could be one sort of bottleneck that could occur that's a little more difficult to overcome, and that's if you have only a sole supplier in a region that gets hit with a catastrophe. That can absolutely paralyze a business. So what I'm saying is, if I buy metal from one person in southern Florida where the storm's going to hit and they got shut down, what's my next plan?
Well, that's an entrepreneurial issue anytime. I mean, not only can they get hit by a, you know, a Category 4 hurricane, you know, they can go bankrupt.
And that's true.
So you always are worried about sole source supplying situations. But, you know, so if somebody calls you and says, you know, John, you know, what do I need to do? Do you have a list for them to do things, or...
A checklist that you go through with them?
I think in my introductory process, I try to analyze risk. And as a broker, I do something a little different. I look at two things. I try to look at them psychologically. Are they risk averse? Are they organized? How much do they need us to store data for them? Because we actually
how much
do that.
Do they lie to you?
Yeah, I mean, you got to understand who you're sitting with. Now, Jeff is typically in people's heads, as he was this morning. He had my whole little thing laid out, even though I didn't share it with him, but that's another story. So psychologically, you want to manage them. Second component that's equally as important is the financial component. How much can they take on risk? You know, you might be a skydiver.
Well, protecting from risk costs money.
It costs money, but there are ways to self-insure, take higher deductibles to get your premiums down. So when you understand them psychologically, you know, does Peter like to skydive and bungee jump? I'm sure you do.
No. I'll answer those questions.
I don't know.
But
why do you say that?
I saw you scuba diving. It was one of the most horrifying moments of my life just watching you.
So after you figure
out... A lifetime scuba diver decided to have his first panic attack with me.
So after you figure out if someone...
Well, you know, when you take me to a river that has piranha in it.
Okay, that's the answer. You know, I'm sorry I'm interrupting you, John, because you really do have me going. You know, I've always heard from people in New England, you know, we're lucky we live in New England. Those things don't happen here. Is that not the most naive thing to say?
Well, I think the insurance companies would tell you that at some point in time, we are in earthquake fault zones. We are in windstorm zones. We're not immune to, unfortunately.
Cape Cod.
We're also not immune to other kinds of attacks, unfortunately, now.
Someone a week ago told me they bought a condo in Florida in the Palm Beaches. And I said, did you get flood insurance? And that person said to me, oh, no, I think that's part of the whole condo fee, that the condo is doing that. And I went, I think you better read the condo docs, and you're probably going to need a supplemental insurance plan in addition to what the condo covers. Was I wrong saying that to her?
No. So when somebody's doing a risk analysis of everything, they need to look at all their exposures that they face, what they want to insure through a carrier and transfer the risk, what they want to self-insure, what their tolerance is. But beyond that, a lot of times if people don't have a note or mortgage on a small, you know, little condo or second home, what they don't recognize is if you have a mortgage and you're in a flood zone, guess what? It's forced insurance. You have to buy the flood. You could be in a flood zone without a note on a property and get wiped out and not have the coverage. The extras of flood, quake, windstorm. What's your windstorm deductible? If all of a sudden a company in Florida imposes a $50,000 windstorm deductible on you and you don't have the assets to pay for it, the policy's no good.
You know, the other thing you said, keep a list. I said to someone just this week who's living in Florida, I said, I don't expect to speak to you in the next few days because your cell coverage is going to go down. If you're going to keep a list of phone numbers and contractors, like you said, you should keep a list of their hard numbers, their hardwired numbers, correct? Not their cell numbers, because the cells could go down too, correct?
I think the more data you store, the better position you are in to respond. Email, cell phone, text, just so that if something does occur, you can get in touch with folks. And honestly, Jeff, those three sort of key things we talked about in the beginning, your insurance, the remediation and mold company, and the contractors, you've got to have information and contacts present so that you can react quickly after it occurs. And hopefully you're with a firm that will assist you in that process. town.
Is that the kind of stuff you do?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you have connections with remediation companies and contractors.
Servpro and, like and all those companies.
Yeah, we have a good handful of remediation, restoration, hygienist contractors. We do not give out 800 numbers. If our clients have a claim, we try to assist them through the process as far as we can. Now, that model is not for everyone, and not everybody offers that model.
I think it's important for people to know as to who you are, though, that you do offer that model, because that's pretty key. I mean, you know, I want to call as few people as I possibly can in that kind of situation, because I don't know who to call, you know, when the tree has landed, you know, on the house and crushed everything and, you know, the rain is pouring in. I don't know what to do.
You got a lot of trees around your little house.
We have one big, big tree.
I have one big tree around my Cape house, and my wife always says, "Isn't that a beautiful tree?" And I go, "It's not going to be beautiful when it's sitting on our house."
Well, we have one advantage, which is we keep our half of the tree. It's on the lot line. We keep it very well maintained, and the people to the other side don't. So I'm assuming that if the roots go, it's going to go that
well,
way.
Well, that's my last question to John. So let's say my Newton house has 150-year-old trees around it. Beautiful trees, and I'm glad that they're not all gone. One of them is just over the line to my neighbor's house, and it's lurching like the Tower of Pisa. And last year I said to my neighbors, look at that tree. Now, I knew they were going to do nothing with it. That tree is lurching towards my house. I know there's a bad storm. That tree's going towards me. That's another issue, correct?
So trees are always sort of an interesting phenomenon after a catastrophe, because people call and say, there's a tree in the yard and it's down. How much do we get for that? Well, did it hit anything? No. Then remove it. If it hits something and causes damage, then there's coverage. It really depends on the specifics of the case.
Is the origin of the tree and it's important too? So if it's on my neighbor's lawn but it hits my house?
A lot of times homeowners companies you'd report the claim to your company and they'll determine if there's liability. Now here's where it gets dicey.
It's going to be thousands of determinations over the next few months.
Where it gets dicey is the old act of God. Was it an act of God? Or was it a liability? So what I'm saying is, you know, if the town comes by and says to you, neighbor, that tree's dying, you need to remove it, etc., and it falls, then that you could make an argument it was a liability. But if it just falls due to wind, there's an argument that it was an act of God.
Well, this is like the federal election. Is it an act of God or is it an act of science?
You want to get me started on this?
Only John has the answer to that, because John is pure. John, if someone wants to find you and prepare for the future properly, how do they find you?
They can contact us by phone at 508-543-1067. They can email me at john.dustin@jedinsurance.com, or they can simply go to our website, www.jedinsurance.com.
Maybe as all this Florida thing unravels, you'll come back and talk again as you see things being dealt with, your opinions about how it's all being dealt with.
I think that'd be a great idea.
Just an ongoing sort of reporter series. Okay.
I would really enjoy that, Jeff.
Us too, so we can create a whole series. We're going to have to see you a lot in the next few weeks.
Great. Thank you.
Great. Again, that was John Dustin of JED Insurance. Check out John. He's quite a guy. And also my co-host, quite a guy, Peter Meyerson from Cone Rasnick, Meyerson & Plaut.
Thank you, Jeff.
I'd say that about Chris, but I wouldn't be – I'd be lying. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back after these messages on Radio Entrepreneurs.